Live on location, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, back at the world headquarters, high atop State Street, a block off the Capitol Square. We are on location here in the town of Dunn, just outside of Oregon, Wisconsin, in south central Wisconsin. For those watching on the stream, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, look at this gorgeous surrounding. I'm surrounded by colors and flowers and sunshine. It could not be better. We thank Gordy Kopke, the owner proprietor here at Kopke's Greenhouse, for allowing us to do this show today. We thank him for his sponsorship of Civic Media and, of course, his time joining us all last hour, answering some great flower and garden questions. We appreciate all of you tuning in and joining in with that. We turn our attention now this half hour to our next guest, and again invite your calls on this subject as well. He is PJ Leash here. He is better known as the Bug Guy to some people across the state of Wisconsin. He is the director of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, holds degrees in biological sciences from UW Parkside and entomology from UW-Madison, also involved with the Wisconsin Master Gardener Program and the First Detector Network, and also an instructor in the Wisconsin Pesticide Applicator Training and UW Farm and Industry Short Course. He's a frequent guest on Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are absolutely honored to have him here on Civic Media. PJ joining us via StreamYard from his very busy offices at UW-Madison. Thank you so much for taking time on what I know is your busy day.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me today, Todd, to chat about cicadas and all things insect related.
Well, it's a fascinating subject. And before we get into the cicadas themselves, how does one get to be known as the Wisconsin Bug Guy? Is this something as a kid you were always out chasing fireflies? What led you to want to go into this?
Yeah, so there was a little bit of that. I grew up in a farm town in southeastern Wisconsin. We had a big yard, shared a pond with a dairy farm next door, like a lot of Wisconsinites do. You just have dairy farms around. But I spent a lot of time as a kid catching frogs and toads and salamanders, fireflies, anything else kind of creepy crawly. And that led to really kind of a blooming interest in biology in my childhood, going through high school. And so when I started college, I knew from day one, biology major, and I never looked back. And then back in about 2005 or so, when I was a student at UW Parkside in Kenosha, I got linked up with an entomologist here in Madison that was starting to do some survey work to look for the invasive emerald ash borer, which we've all heard a lot about. It wasn't here yet that we knew of, but I did two summers of a job looking for that as part of an internship. And so I scouted thousands of ash trees in southeastern Wisconsin and other parts of the state. Didn't find it at the time, but that got my foot in the door to entomology. So I tell folks emerald ash borer was my gateway bug. That led to graduate school. And then it was also a little bit of luck. My predecessor, Phil Pelletieri, ran the diagnostic lab here for about 35 plus years. And he happened to be retiring, and I was interested in the position and moved in. I've been doing it a decade already.
I thought it was interesting that your predecessor also went by PJ as well. So I'm like, maybe the only hire PJs here at this position.
Not quite. That's just kind of random chance how it happened.
Well, I think it's so cool. And what I love about this is your passion for it, but also the fact that we're finding out things that I didn't necessarily know existed before. And from reading a couple articles, so you have people that will email you or literally either put a bug in the mail or stop by and say, what the heck is this?
Yeah. And really the reason for the foundation of the lab back in the late 70s was to help colleagues in the University Extension Service around the state. As you can imagine, if you were an agriculture educator, ag agent, in various counties, you've got to answer questions about the health of dairy cows, about crops, about what's this insect in my yard or garden or house. And so the idea was, let's try this diagnostic lab thing. There was some temporary funding as kind of a 3-month experiment, and it was so successful. Here we are close to 50 years later at this point. So I do get emails, photographs. I mean, these days everyone's got a pretty high resolution camera in their pocket. Right. I do get samples in the mail, and sometimes folks in the Madison area just pop in and drop something off. Had a couple folks stop by earlier and just told them right away what it was, and if it was something worrisome, what they could potentially do about it.
You're younger than me, but I know back in the day when Johnny Carson used to host The Tonight Show, and Letterman did a kind of a bit on it, they had a bit called Stump the Band, where somebody in the audience would try to figure out a song that Doc Severinsen or Paul Schaefer couldn't play. They win a prize or whatever. Has anybody ever stumped the Wisconsin Bug Guy?
Yeah, it depends on context, though. So first of all, we've got an estimated probably 20,000 insect species in the state. We don't know an exact number, but probably something in that ballpark. So there's still plenty of things that I have not seen. But also, it depends. Sometimes I get in photos that are just so-so. You know, I can only narrow something down so far and say, if we want to know the exact genus or species, I really need to see it under the microscope and work with it. So that happens on a very regular basis. Sometimes about 4 or 5% of my cases come from out of state or even international cases. And sometimes those can take me a while to figure out. I'm actually helping a colleague work on narrowing down the identity of some beetles from Uzbekistan right now. And that's just going to be a little fun side project. It's probably going to take me a while just to track down and get some taxonomic keys translated to be able to start the process of working on those.
That's absolutely fascinating. And again, world identification happening at University of Wisconsin-Madison. I just think that's super cool. If you have a bug question or a cicada question for PJ, give us a call, 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. You can text us on the Civic Media app available on your Apple or Android device. All right, PJ, let's get into it here. So this year, between now and the beginning of July, billions, with a B, billions of periodical cicadas are emerging across the central and southern United States. So we got brood 13 and we got brood 19. Brood 13, I'm told, appears every 17 years. Brood 19 appears every 13 years. And for the first time since 1803, these two broods are coming out together and emerging together. I mean, with everything else going on in the world, PJ, is this the locust coming? Is this a biblical sign, or is this just science?
This is just science.
Okay, all right, very good.
With these life cycles, we know when they're going to come out, and it turns out there are written records of these insects dating back to about the 1630s, with some of the Europeans coming over to the Plymouth colony in New England. And they said, what the heck are all these things? Because these periodical cicadas only occur in the eastern half of the U.S. So imagine that, coming to the New World, seeing something and experiencing something you've never thought of before. And of course, there were, you know, some biblical connotations, the plagues of Egypt. And for a while, these insects were referred to as flies. Sometimes they were referred to as locusts or 17-year locusts. And locust is basically a type of grasshopper, but locusts can be problems for crops and things like that. Mm. These cicadas really don't harm your corn crops or bean crops, anything like that. But we have been having written records and studies of these insects for close to 400 years at this point. And prior to that, of course, the Native Americans living here were very well of these insects too, because they would see them pop out on a regular basis.
So talk to us a little bit about these broods. Why is it that they only appear on these timetables of 17 and 13 years respectively, and where are they the rest of the time?
Yeah, so there's still some of the core things of their biology that we don't fully understand. Like some of the species have a 13-year cycle, some have a 7-year cycle. There's probably some genetic components to that, but we still don't fully understand why, because all our other cicada species that we see in the state, their life cycles might be in the range of 2 to 3, 4, maybe 5-ish years. But these very long life cycles, What's the mechanism? What makes that tick? We do know there's some possible reasons for that. It could be a potential evolutionary strategy. If you come out at very long time intervals and in huge numbers, there's so many of you that predators can't catch on to that, and that's going to ensure some survive to reproduce. But it is really cool to think about. I've got a couple of young kids at home, and so ask them, how old are these insects? And you know, they're thinking single-digit numbers, but these insects popping out in Wisconsin this year are 17 years old. For most of their life cycle, we're talking like 95%+ of their life cycle. It's below ground, in the dark, in the soil, in the, about the top 2 feet or so of the soil. They are feeding on the roots of trees. Don't really hurt the trees, but they sit there and they've got a mouth part kind of like a mosquito. So they poke it into the tree roots and they drink sap out of it.
Got it. And they don't, and to clear things up, these are not bugs that are going to attack us as humans or even probably our pets, correct?
Right. They're really quite harmless. They're not toxic. They don't have any poisons in them or anything like that. They don't have a stinger, so they can't sting you. They're not going to bite you. I mean, maybe if you grabbed one, they're really lethargic, but if you're mean to it, ripping things off, it might try biting you, at which point, you know, maybe you have it coming to you.
Exactly.
But, no, they're really quite harmless. They are clumsy. They're docile. And the only thing on their mind for the most part is trying to mate for the month or so that the adults are out. And because they are clumsy, they're actually going to be a big benefit to wildlife in the area. All sorts of fish, birds, turtles, mammals are going to gorge themselves on these things.
Now, see, you bring up an interesting question. I got about a minute and a half here before the first break. But it, this reminds me a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's a PBS series called Survival Big Little Journeys or something. I've watched a couple of these on bugs. And basically, it seems like cicadas, their entire mission is to emerge, eat, and have sex and die. I mean, wouldn't that just be the life if that was all there was to life? I mean, it sounds like a pretty good gig, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I mean, there's actually quite a few insects that have a story somewhat similar to that. They will emerge for a short period of time in very large numbers. In some cases, they may not even eat at all, and they're just trying to mate in this very short window of time. And so it's a mad dash. That same kind of thing happens. We hear of these huge emergences of mayflies along the Mississippi River, like La Crosse area. Mm-hmm. That usually happens every year in June, July. They only come out for about 24, 36 hours. So they don't even eat as adults. They're just mad dash to try and mate, and that's it.
Sounds like a club downtown. We'll come back and ask PJ. Oh, here's a great question for a listener. What advice for people who are scared of bugs? Your questions, your calls, 855-752-4842. Back with more on Location from Copies. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are live at Kopke's Greenhouse in the beautiful town of Dunn, just outside of Oregon, Wisconsin. We talked to Gordy of Kopke's Greenhouse last hour, talking this half hour with PJ Leash, who is the Insect Diagnostic Lab Director at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the Extension Department. He is an entomologist. Am I saying that correctly? Entomologist? Yep. All right, very good. And better known as Wisconsin's Bug Guy, which I love that handle. You can find him on the old Twitter, which is now X, and answering your bug questions. PJ, I read here from one of the things the university put out, says you received about 2,500 requests to identify insects per year, but that goes up dramatically at a time like this when all these cicadas come out, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will be really curious to see what my caseload is like when all the dust settles at the end of this year. But if you were to look at a chart month-by-month basis of caseload, it's a distinct bell curve. I get into about mid-May, and then things are really pretty busy until about mid-September, and they start easing up a bit. So my summer months, I'm usually getting 20 to 30 different insect identification requests per day.
And wow. And how many media histories do you want from goofballs like me who never call you any other time, and the cicadas come out like, oh, now we want to talk to him.
Oh, gosh. I keep track of media interviews from my annual reporting and that sort of thing, and I think this is about interview number 53 for the year. So
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you. I know it is. We have lots of questions here. We're going to get to them. If you have a question for PJ regarding cicadas or other bugs, 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842, or you can text us on the Civic Media app. Let's get right into it, PJ. This is Matt listening in from Germantown, Wisconsin on WAUK in Waukesha. Says, what advice do you have for someone who is scared of bugs? Good question. I mean, some people, it makes people squirmish for some folks.
Yeah, great question, Matt. And it's a common question that I get. I think one thing is to kind of look at the bigger picture. We have about 20,000 or so different insect species in Wisconsin. Then you add all the spiders and other things on top of that, that are closely related to them. Worldwide, there's over 1 million known species of insects. And the vast majority of these, the overwhelming majority, we're talking 95-ish% of all these insects are beneficial. They're providing critical ecosystem services like pollination, like breaking down dead stuff that could be plant material, it could be roadkill. There's a long list of insects that help break that stuff down and kind of recycle those nutrients in the ecosystem. So they do some really important things. But I think what really can get people to connect is just the fascinating nature of some of these things. One of my favorite books I ever read about insects was called Secret Weapons by Thomas Eisner. And it talks about the chemical defenses of insects and related creatures. And it's mind-boggling what insects can do. There is a type of beetle called the bombardier beetle, for example, that basically has two tanks of chemicals in its body. And when they're separate, they're fine. But if it's startled and needs to defend itself, it mixes these together in a chute. They react explosively and come out boiling hot out the back end of the insect. So there's wild facts about insects out there. And I think when folks read about that, it's like, wow, that's really cool. I want to know more.
That's incredible. That was worth the whole segment right there. That's incredible. All right, we got a lot of questions. Well, I'll get to it here. We have Donna calling in or texting in from La Crosse, Wisconsin, on the Eagle up there in La Crosse. Our station there says the question is there any type of competition between the two broods of cicadas when they emerge at the same time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Again, so this year we have two different broods, brood 13, Roman numeral 13, which is up here in Wisconsin, northern Illinois, a little bit of Indiana, a little bit of Iowa. Then there's brood 19, the great southern brood, which goes from kind of mid Illinois down south and then all the way across to Georgia and the Carolinas. It turns out for these two broods, they only overlap very slightly, maybe a couple of counties in central Illinois. Central Eastern Illinois, and there also might be some separation temporally in terms of the timing. So these two broods this year really aren't going to be interacting much, if at all. But when you look at the bigger picture, technically there are a total of 15 currently known broods of cicadas. So there's 12 with 17-year cycles, there's 3 with 13-year cycles. And if you look at a map, U.S. Forest Service has a cool color-coded map. Some states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, you can have 4 or 5 broods in the same state. So they do overlap a little bit, but my impression is they're probably having enough space underground, enough tree roots to go around. So I'm not aware of really much direct competition between the different broods.
And correct me if I'm wrong, PJ, we're talking to PJ Leach from University of Wisconsin-Madison, the bug guy, about cicadas in particular, but all bug questions. Not particularly harmful to plants, except I think I read that the 8 or 10 inches on a branch where they might lay their eggs, so you can put a mesh over that for a couple of weeks until they're done, but otherwise no major damage, correct, to plants?
Right. And their damage is actually caused not through feeding, but through egg laying of the females. And as you just mentioned, Todd, she'll lay eggs in twigs, small branches. So the outer 6 to 12 inches might break off. Those leaves will wilt. On a large tree, it's going to be conspicuous, but the trees just shrug it off. But if you have a small tree, like you just planted it last year, cover it with fine mesh netting. But one thing I'd really like to highlight is the distribution of periodical cicadas in Wisconsin. It's really spotty. It's like pushpins on a map. And so most folks in the state are not going to have these in their yard or neighborhood. There's hot spots like Lake Geneva, Beloit, Janesville, and so on. But a question I've been asking folks, because I've had a lot of folks contact me, do I need to worry about my trees? And I ask, were you in the same house in 07 during the last emergence? If you were, and you did not see them that year, you almost certainly won't see them this year. And if that's the case, you don't have to worry about your plants, because the cicadas, they really don't leave areas where they come out of. They're restricted to these same spots every single year.
Let's go quickly to the phone lines. Lee calling in from Lomira. Lee, your phone call. Go ahead quickly, please.
Hi, PJ. You have a fascinating vocation. I have a question about cicadas. If you pick a cicada up and place it on your hand or arm, they seem to stick to you. How are they able to accomplish this?
Yeah, great question. So it turns out most insects will have these little claw-like structures at the end of their legs, a area called the tarsi. We would informally call it the feet. But basically, they've got these little hooks on there, kind of like the hooks on Velcro. So most insects have those at the tips of their legs. It allows them to hang on very well. There's a few exceptions. Some, like the water striders that walk on the surface of the water, theirs are actually raised up more towards their elbow, so to speak, so they don't break the surface tension. But with those little claws there present, they can hang on very well.
Speed round, 20 seconds. Any natural ant deterrents? Someone wants to know.
Oh, gosh. Nothing that's great. I hear a lot of hype about various essential oils and cinnamon and stuff like that. There may be a hint of truth, a bit of repellency, but nothing long-lasting.
Are cicadas good fishing bait?
Oh, that's a great question. I would suspect so. I have not heard about it myself, so you might have to give it a try.
All right, sounds good. This is somebody, Alyssa in Oshkosh, say, love the conversation about cicadas. And just wanted to say thanks a lot, and thank you, PJ, so very much. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for all you do. And you can find him at Wisconsin Bug Guy. Thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me today.
Our pleasure. PJ Leach of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Wisconsin's Bug Guy. Stay tuned. More On Location from Kopke's next. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tyler Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are live on location here at the beautiful Kopke's Greenhouse in the town of Dunn, just outside of Oregon, Wisconsin. And let me tell you, Mr. Zommers, we are here, and it's beautiful. I know you're back at the studios high atop State Street. But have you been out here before, by the way? Have you come out here?
I have not, but I'm not exactly sure what my Memorial Day weekend plans are yet. But if I am staying in town, I will definitely head out there and at least get a brat and make a small donation.
Yeah, get a brat. Gordy, the owner here, is going to be grilling a brat. They've got drinks. And all proceeds, because they get all this stuff donated, you see, all the proceeds from the brat stand, as well as the planter auction, all of it goes to Wisconsin Honor Flights, and is to help get veterans out to Washington, D.C. It's a great cause, and it's just going to be a good time had by all, as my old teacher Ken Lewis is fond of saying. But come on out here on Sunday, 3 o'clock, and live music. We're right here in this beautiful gazebo, hand-built by Gordy Kopke himself, and there's going to be live music here in the gazebo. There's going to be food. There's going to be this plant auction at 3 o'clock, so stop on out. And by the way, of course, you could buy yourself a vegetable or a flowering plant to put on your deck or your patio or in your garden or what have you. It's a great place, and it's easy enough to find. It just basically type into your phone, your smartphone or whatever, or your device, Kopke's Greenhouse. It's spelled K-O-P as in Paul, K-E-S Greenhouse, Kopke's Greenhouse in Oregon, Wisconsin, or technically in the town of Dunn. It's a beautiful little drive out here. It's just south of Madison. Plenty of free parking for you, and just a great time, hospitality. And as I said, as you can see the plants, if you're watching on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. In front of me, some beautiful plants here on our set today and behind me as well. Just you can spend a lot of time here, and the selection is fantastic. The quality of the plants, the staff here is not only knowledgeable, but super, super friendly. And we heard from Gordy in the first hour, that's really something that was had been a goal of his. I'll tell you, he's achieved it, which is having this very knowledgeable and friendly staff around. You can't walk very far at all without somebody asking you, hey, have you been helped? Do you have any questions? Welcome. It's just a great place. And also, the thing that I really stands out to me as well is the affordability of the products here. I mean, you're not going to get gouged, you know, if you come out here to Kopke's. The prices are fair, and especially for what you're getting, which is fantastic quality plants right here. Glad to be here today, and thanks again to Gordy Kopke for all of the great hospitality. Also, thanks again to PJ Leash. How about PJ? Great to have him on, Wisconsin's bug guy, and thanks for all the participation, thanks for all the calls and the text there as well. The cicadas break coming out. I don't want to say a breakout. That sounds like it's you know, a terrible, terrible thing. I think for some people, it's just more inconvenient, right, Mr. Somers? I mean, I've heard some people having scheduling weddings, right, but from the research I got from UW-Madison, it's like 90 or 100 decibels if you're right in like where some of these cicadas are coming out.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're singing to each other, you understand? The males are singing to the females because they want to hook up before they die. I mean, don't we all? But I mean, not all of us are yelling at 90 decibels.
That video I watched about cicadas, if you or anybody you know is interested in just sound, how sound works, the physics mm-hmm. of it, just trying weird things with sound, check out Ben Jordan, B-E-N-N, Ben Jordan on YouTube. Okay. His video about cicadas was excellent, and I learned the reason why they're so loud, because something that small should not be able to be 90 or 100 decibels. But right. So that's the male cicadas. The female cicadas just click really slowly, so it's just like...
just
a
chilling.
Slow click. And
they're
so
chilling.
if you want to bring all the boys to the yard, you just get a little like one of those handheld clickers and just slowly click it, and the male cicadas will land on you like crazy. But the reason that they're so loud is because they have built in basically the same thing, the same mechanism as the little handheld clicker, but there's two of them, and they are so perfectly in sync that they just multiply each other like crazy, and it gets so loud. I thought it was fascinating.
It would be fascinating to hear them. I'm not sure I want to live next to an outbreak, but an emergence. But fascinating information from PJ Leisha. We appreciate him coming on the show today. Mr. Somers, we have a special Memorial Day show coming up next Monday. By the way, tomorrow, Jeff Timmer is going to join us. And for those who normally join us on Wednesdays for our political conversation with Pat Kreitlow from Up North News Radio and from Trigvi Olson, the Lincoln Project. They'll both return next Wednesday, but we had an opportunity to do this show on location, so we wanted to do that today. Tomorrow, Jeff Timmer from the Lincoln Project is going to be joining us in hour number one. And then on Friday, Brady Ewing, three-time Big Ten champion with the Wisconsin football Badgers, also spent 3 years in the NFL. He'll be on the show on Friday, so two big days left. And then Monday, we're going to have one of the folks from Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs in talking about all the great work that they do on Veterans Day. Do you have any plans, Mr. Zomers, to travel anywhere for the weekend?
I do. I may go to Manitowoc to visit my family. I'm not 100% sure on that yet, but I know on Monday I'll be going to a baseball game.
Mm. The Brewers? The Brew Crew?
Yes.
Oh, nicely done. Nicely done. Well, here now from courtesy of CBS News, I know a lot of people are going to be traveling. It's a big travel weekend. Here, a quick story that I thought that folks might enjoy here. From CBS, Memorial Day weekend 2024 could break travel records. Here's what to know. What you need to know. I know, right? Despite another month of spring technically still ahead, travelers often view Memorial Day weekend as an unofficial kickoff to the summer season. And traffic notoriously reflects that. Based on current forecasts, travel around the upcoming 2024 holiday this coming Monday, May 27th, is not expected to relieve Memorial Day of its bad reputation for drivers and airline passengers. They may actually find themselves on some of the busiest highways and flights they've seen in decades. The American Automobile Association, or AAA, warned of potentially unprecedented congestion on the roads this weekend, along with airports that could be even more crowded than in past years. The organization, which looks at various economic factors and partners with other groups to project travel conditions, announced earlier this month that an estimated, get this, 43.8 million people across the United States would likely travel at least 50 miles between tomorrow, Thursday, and Monday, Memorial Day proper. That would mark a 4% increase in overall travel compared to last year, according to AAA. It would also come close to the busiest Memorial Day weekend on record, which happened in 2005, when 44 million people left home for the holiday. Now, for those planning to hit the road or board a plane this weekend, here is what to know. Memorial Day weekend this year expected to set new records for road trips, according to AAA. As we said, 38.4 million people expected to travel over the course of the holiday weekend, which would be the biggest holiday since the group started keeping track of Memorial Day travel in 2000. Car rental company Hertz told AAA that demand for rentals this year will be the highest in Atlanta, Boston, Las Vegas, and Orlando. So that's what you need to know. Most renters scheduled to pick up their cars on Thursday and Friday. In general, and this is news you can use, drivers hoping to beat the traffic or at least face less of it should avoid the roads during the afternoon hours on any day of the long weekend. According to AAA, the worst times to travel by car in any U.S. time zone is between 12 noon and 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Well, that's bad news for me, at least on Monday, is that the game I'm going to is at 3:10, so I'm going to be driving during the worst time.
Go early, Mr. Zalbers. But yeah, so tomorrow, Thursday, noon to 6, and then also between noon and 7 p.m. on Friday, between 2 and 5 p.m. on Saturday, 3 and 7 p.m. on Sunday, and 3 and 7 p.m. on Monday. So as they say, the early bird gets the worm. If you want to get on the road early, if you want to beat some of the traffic. Some of the best times, the best time to travel, according to AAA this weekend, before 11 a.m. or after 7 p.m. tomorrow, before 11 a.m. or after 8 p.m. on Friday, before 1 p.m. or after 6 p.m. on Saturday, and before 1 p.m. on Sunday, and after 7 p.m. on Monday. So there you go. Your travel tips on when, again, probably just to say it succinctly, get on the road early and try to be at your destination before noon, if you can, to avoid the biggest crowds. Now, if you're flying, airports across the country are bracing for another spike in travelers following an upward trend in flights booked around Memorial Day since last year's air travel numbers exceeded pre-pandemic levels. An estimated 3.5 million people are projected to fly this weekend, according to AAA. That's up from about 100,000 who traveled on planes to their destination last year. If as many people fly as expected, this will be the most crowded Memorial Day weekend at airports since 2005. United Airlines alone says that 500,000 people are expected to fly each day between Thursday and Tuesday, which would be the airline's busiest Memorial Day on record. I would not want to be at an airport this weekend, Mr. Zalbers.
I would not either.
No. It's kind of like Thanksgiving Day weekend. But if you are going to go, if you've already bought your tickets, if you're flying this weekend, as they say, pack your patience.
Because nobody
wants a hothead, you know?
The only good thing about traveling on holidays is that there are some good movies about it.
Well, that's true. planes, trains, and automobiles.
Exactly, exactly.
Where are you where are you flying this weekend? Where are you traveling this weekend? Give us a sense of what you're up to. 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. Make it easy for you. 855-75-CIVIC. Or you can text us on the Civic Media app. Tell us where you're going to this weekend, on this holiday weekend. And as we say, look, I mean, it is a great weekend. Again, most folks, or a lot of people, get an extra day if you're not working on Monday. And that's fine. Go out and enjoy the barbecues and the lake and whatever you're going to do out there. Enjoy it with friends and family. But just take a moment at least to pause and reflect and remember what Memorial Day proper is about. And that is the remembrance, particularly of those who gave everything, our military folks who lost their lives in battle, so that you and I could go out and enjoy all these freedoms that we, at least I, too often take for granted. So we'll have a special Memorial Day show, as we said, on Monday, and looking forward to bringing you that. A lot of music on some military bands and that sort of thing, and looking forward to that special show on Monday. 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Also text us on the Civic Media app. Matt from Germantown, listening on WAUK, says, I'm driving to Minnesota from Milwaukee at 1 p.m. Friday. Sounds like it's not going to be fun. Well, maybe better, Matt, than, you know, getting on the road at like 3 p.m. See, I think I think the longer you go into the middle of the afternoon, because people are starting to get off of work, or they might say, well, I can take an hour or two early, but I can't leave at, you know, 11 o'clock. So the earlier I think you can go, the better off you are. But just pack your patience. Don't do the road rage thing. And, you know, don't be a goofball. I'm not talking to Matt specifically, but anybody. You know, we don't need these 95-mile-per-hour drivers zipping in and out. That's what causes a lot of these accidents.
Absolutely.
Also listening on WMDX from Madison, a listener texts in and says, I never travel on these sorts of holidays. I take the 4 days after the holiday off every year, stringing together 9 straight days off, and I prep my gardens, pool, and landscaping for the summer. Now that is a smart caller, a smart listener,
yeah,
right there. How about that? Back with one more segment live from Kopke's Greenhouse in beautiful Oregon, Wisconsin. Don't go anywhere. We're live on location. It's the All Balls Show for Wednesday on the Civic Media Radio Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tom Ball Show, live on location on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are live at Kopke's Greenhouse in the town of Dunn proper in Dane County, just outside by a couple of miles, as Bob Uecker might say, just a bit outside of Oregon, Wisconsin. And if you're unfamiliar, that's just south of Madison. It's a quick little short nice drive from Madison down here to Kopke's. And as I said, even if you don't live in the Madison area proper and you want to, you know, take a little day trip or over the weekend, hop in your vehicle and come on down to Kopke's, and it's going to be a great time. Have all great plants, affordable prices, fantastic, knowledgeable, friendly staff. And on Sunday, noon until 4, I think you said, noon until 3, live music here at the gazebo, which we're in right now. And then at 3 o'clock, that great benefit auction, all kinds of planters, beautiful, full-grown, ready-to-go planters at Kopke's Greenhouse. And they're going to be auctioned off by a professional auctioneer. All proceeds, along with the concession proceeds, are going to go to the Wisconsin Honor Flight to help get our Wisconsin veterans out to Washington, D.C., and to honor them. So it's a great cause. It's a great company. It's a great place to be. Kopke's Greenhouse this Sunday from noon until 3, auction at 3 o'clock. But you can be out here 7 days a week. It is spectacular. 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. We've got Catherine on the line talking about Memorial Day weekend plans because we've been asking folks where you're going, if you're going anywhere. Catherine, thanks for listening and calling in. What say you?
Well, you know, Terry Bell and I, the director for Civic Media, Terry Bell and I are driving back from Chicago, listening to your wonderful show, and you convinced us, Todd, the roads will be too bad for the rest of the week. We're nervous. So Terry and I decided to just go to your house, just be ready for the whole weekend at your place. Is that okay?
Well, that's fine, because people that don't know, Catherine is our program director here at Civic Media, doing a fantastic job, and Terry Bell, our news director, equally fantastic. Catherine happens to be my direct boss. So, yes, Catherine, if you say you're coming to my house, I guess I have no choice but to say yes.
Terry wants to go buy some snacks, so we'll have everything set up for you, but we just need to know where to sleep, what room is ours, you know,
sure.
Terry wants his own room.
Well, maybe I'll bring you one of these great plans, because I know you have a deck, and so, you know, we'll bring one of our fine sponsors here, Kopke's Greenhouse, will bring you a plant and we'll celebrate. I know Terry likes he's a big morel mushroom fan. Maybe we'll bring him we have strawberry plants here. He could grow his own strawberries this year. How about that?
I'm down for it, absolutely.
He's ready.
All right, fantastic.
He's ready.
Well, tell folks, we got a couple of minutes here, as long as we got you on the phone. You're making your way back from Chicago. I know Civic Media is going to be covering both the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee this summer, but also the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Give us the lay of the land. You guys have been down there with national media scouting this out. Are plans underway? Are we all set? What did you learn on your trip down to Chicago?
Right. Well, these events are what they call walking through. And the party officials are really helping us, show us this is what you've got with the arena, the workspaces, what do you want, what do you need, what do you don't need. And it just really helps when you're making these plans remotely. They're just vague concepts. When you're actually there at the venues, you can see, oh, this is where the radio booth is. Oh, this is where Media Row will be. And it's very helpful also, you know, there's a lot of expense and a lot of rules about things, and they help go over that sort of thing. So the convention planners, both parties have been incredibly helpful. And we're looking forward to getting the people of Wisconsin some great information those 2 weeks.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Terry and Catherine. Yeah, I'm looking forward. We're going to be doing our show from both of those conventions. And like you said, Terry, I'm looking forward to not just bringing people, you know, what they might normally see on the television or what have you, but trying to bring some of these stories of folks who are there and a little bit of behind the scenes that people might not get on the major networks. And looking forward to working with both of you and being down there. I mean, it's historic, and especially, you know, no matter how people vote, to have a national convention in Wisconsin, economically, it's good. We're hoping, at least, for some kind of a boon. Even if you don't agree with the politics, take their money, right? It spends as much, as better, as well as anybody else's.
Oh, my goodness. Republican National Convention and the NFL draft down eastern Wisconsin, the ripple effects be felt for miles and miles beyond Milwaukee and Green Bay.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Who's driving, Catherine or Terry?
Yeah, I'm driving. And I'll tell you one thing that Terry didn't mention, because what's happening outside the venues will be the same as it was today, I suspect. We got protested.
Did you really?
Going to Garfield, what's it called? Garfield Conservancy. It's really interesting. It was lovely. We got to speak to a woman named Mary there who works there. And we met some of our colleagues and had a couple drinks, just getting ready for the morning this morning, last night. And I'll be darned if there wasn't a protest against our war in Israel. I mean, the war that's going on in Israel. And it was there, and it was also at the arena downtown Chicago. So they're going to be there in August, I can guarantee you.
See,
and July, I think, in Milwaukee.
See, when I hear stories like this, I just want to, as we heard from our guest in the first half hour here of PJ Leash, I just want to be a cicada. I just want to emerge, eat, have sex, and die. You know, that's all I want. And I just want, if there is reincarnation, I'm coming back as a cicada. Well, I appreciate you guys calling in. Stay safe out there on the roadways. And yes, I think we should just chill out this Memorial Day, not go anywhere. At least we're coming to Kopke's Greenhouse for this great auction coming up at 3 o'clock on Sunday. Thanks so much, Catherine and Terry, for calling in. We'll see you back at the station tomorrow. Appreciate it. Thank you. Well, all right, they're coming up. I guess, Amherst, you're invited too. Come on over. Special thanks to Gordy Kopke for being a great guest, also being a great host. Also to PJ Leash from the Extension and UW-Madison, Wisconsin's bug guy on cicadas. Mr. Amherst doing a great job, as well as Luke Mathers helping out on engineering today. Catherine Lake and Terry Bell for calling in and being fantastic as well. And most of all of you for listening and for calling in and texting. Thank you. Come out to Kopke's Greenhouse this Sunday, 3 o'clock, a great auction for Wisconsin Honor Flight. Stay tuned now for Maggie Dawn. This is Todd Allball. Say whatever you're fighting for, whatever you believe in, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. We'll see you tomorrow back in the studio, live from Kopke's Greenhouse. Make it a great day.